Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 21st, 2015. Can you believe it? Today we're joined by our frequent guest and co-host, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing on this August 21st, Mr. D.R. Tucker?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well. Glad to have you with us. So as always, DR, it's been a big week in climate news. You wouldn't think there'd be so much to talk about, right, for this niche topic that only climate hawks care about. Lots of stuff going on. So tell me, DR, why don't you take us on kind of a grand tour of the things that have happened this week?
Well, one of the major events that occurred this week is that President Obama announced that the Obama administration had announced that they had given the final go-ahead to Shell to drill in Alaska's Arctic waters, the sensitive Chukchi Sea, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, just a couple of weeks after he had issued some new landmark regulations involving the Clean Power Plan. This is, as you might imagine, a highly controversial decision. There has been some speculation that it's a decision that to where Obama's hands were legally forced as a result of Shell first obtaining drilling permits in the Arctic during the first George W. Bush administration. But the announcement occurs just days after it was previously announced that President Obama would visit the Arctic in late August. So this creates the sort of odd imagery, as Rachel Maddow of MSNBC noted, of President Obama going to the Arctic to, you know, point to the damage done by the sort of climate change that is caused by the drilling for oil in places like the Arctic that Shell wants to do. It's as if Obama has, again, perhaps he was legally forced to, but nevertheless, the Obama administration worsening something that the Obama administration is decrying. So right. It's one of these sort of the ultimate climate catch 22, if you will.
Right. And this, so just that everyone remembers, the drilling in the Arctic Sea, the Chukchi Sea, which is someplace off Alaska, is being done by Royal Dutch Shell, and this was the operation that was being opposed by the kayaktivists and the people that were dangling from the bridge to prevent the icebreaker from leaving. And you know it's all going to come back around in a few months because that big drilling rig's got to come back into Seattle Harbor, right?
Exactly.
So we're going to do it all over again in a few weeks. But it is interesting, the contrast between, I don't know, Obama's words and actions here. I think you're right that, as you said, the lease was given to Shell into the previous administration, and at that point it's kind of a done deal as long as Royal Dutch Shell doesn't screw things up too much, right? Mm-hmm. So Obama may not have been able to stop it.
But as Rachel Maddow noted, that Shell only has about 4 weeks. The season to drill goes about 4 weeks long. So there's a lot of activists who are basically saying they're going to try to do whatever it takes to sort of run out the clock. I believe Greenpeace said that for Shell. So that therefore, if they don't make it, then basically Shell has to start all over again next year. It's going to be the ultimate Pyrrhic victory, I guess, for Shell if they get the rights to do so, then they effectively can't do so.
Well, the visit to the Arctic is quite a symbolic kind of event for the president. In my understanding, he's also going to make another symbolic visit down to Louisiana, right?
Yes, that's correct. That on August 27th, 2 days before he arrives in the Arctic, he's going to visit New Orleans to mark the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, which is a storm that, as Ross Gelbspan of the Boston Globe and others have noted before, is a storm that is a textbook example of a climate change influenced event. And it does raise the question as to whether or not Obama will announce either if either in New Orleans or when he goes to the Arctic, that as a result of the devastation caused by climate change, he now sees fit to give a thumbs down to the Keystone XL pipeline. I think there are a lot of activists hoping that he will take this opportunity to do so, and it would be a grand event and something internationally noted if he does a speech either in New Orleans or in the Arctic saying that as a result of the damage caused by events such as Katrina, the extreme weather events such as Katrina, and as a result of what's happening to the glaciers in the Arctic, that we have a moral obligation not to burn any more fossil fuel. And as a result, I'm going to say no to the dirtiest fossil fuel, which is the tar sands involved in Keystone XL.
Well, we should let our listeners vote. But I guess Obama's not going there till early September, right? So people can say whether or not they think Obama, because really he's doubling down, right? Between the Chukchi Sea, the Katrina visit, and the Arctic visit. It's really creating a high stakes game.
Exactly. And this is
But I mean, I think, you know, DR, you and I have spoken about it. We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of Katrina, and we are hoping to do, you know, more focused discussion on what Katrina means. But for many climate hawks, Katrina was the like this first big revelation, the first big climate-related event, right? In addition to being completely devastating to New Orleans, it focused a lot of people's mind. And, of course, since then, we've had Hurricane Irene, Hurricane Sandy. We're having the drought out in California. I mean, what do you think is the, I don't know, after 10 years, what's the take-home lesson of Katrina for climate hawks? Do we have one yet? Or are we still, you know, what was it when Richard Nixon asked Chairman Mao what Chairman Mao thought of the French Revolution? Chairman Mao said, it's still too early to tell. Same thing goes for Katrina. I mean, can we even look at that and figure out what the implications of Katrina for climate activism have been?
Well, it's interesting. Last weekend, I was watching the Spike Lee documentary, When the Levees Broke, which was released a year after Katrina, and in the documentary, not only does he cite the fact that this was a storm that was caused and exacerbated, this is a storm that was exacerbated by climate change, he also, you know, gets into the issue of how climate change worsens economic disparities, economic inequality, and how these extreme weather events fall disproportionately upon the people least able to handle it. And when you add that to government's failure to respond to, you know, unnatural disasters, if you will, it basically exposes all of these problems that are caused by, you know, carbon pollution, that that climate change. I believe I believe it's Leslie Fields of the Sierra Club who know that climate change exacerbates all other underlying inequalities. And that documentary definitely demonstrated that in terms of Katrina.
Well, and I think I agree. I mean, it is not a truism, but it's a truth that the people least able to manage this stuff are the ones that are going to get hit the hardest. Mm-hmm. And that when they get hit, it's not necessarily going to look like a Katrina. I mean, there's this obvious weather-related kind of disaster, or the oceans rise, right? We're talking about that in Bangladesh. We've talked in the past about how the crisis in Syria is thought to be, can be connected to climate through a chain of pretty reasonable logical connections. It's true that the people that can least afford it are going to get hit the hardest. United States, you know, for all of our stuff, it's going to rain. Well, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but the United States is much better able to withstand what may be happening than other places, right? So, I mean, I guess that's the, that reasoning, you know, to circle back around. We touched a few weeks ago on the Pope's encyclical Laudato Si, where, I mean, he was basically coupling environmental activism with social justice, right? Environmental justice, and I think in a very effective way. Since then, there have been other, not since, actually preceding that, you know, there was a creation care movement among conservative Christians. There was, I think that the Episcopal Church of England has started to divest things like that. Have there been any other sort of breaking news on the climate slash religion front lately?
Well, there was a great announcement by prominent Islamic leaders who issued a call for 1.6 billion Muslims around the world to honor a moral obligation to protect the environment and to reduce carbon pollution. These leaders, including the Grand Muftis of Lebanon and Uganda, endorsed what's known as the Islamic Declaration of Climate Change, along with, according to The Guardian, prominent Islamic scholars and teachers from 20 countries. And they and in this statement, they basically said that Muslims around the world have a moral obligation to protect the poor. They have a moral obligation to not exploit resources, and they have a moral obligation to combat carbon pollution. So this is a strong call for Muslims around the world to basically do their part to combat the ravages of carbon pollution, and it's a call especially upon Muslim nations that are you know, petro states that they have to step up as well, that they don't get a pass. In fact, they have more of an obligation than anybody else to move away from fossil fuels and transition away from fossil fuels. And you know, there's been reports in the past about various Muslim petro states that are now investing in clean energy because they know that the era of fossil fuels is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to note that already there's a recognition of the moral obligation, as well as the financial obligation, but definitely the moral obligation upon Muslims to leave the carbon in the ground, to leave the dirty energy in the ground.
It's interesting that, I mean, there's apparently a coalescence of sort of moral and religious thinking that is gravitating to the conclusion that climate is a moral issue that has to be addressed on these grounds. I mean, I think this is potentially a really influential kind of shift in our thinking. I mean, probably as consequential as whatever Katrina means for us, right? When you, exactly. In a few years, we'll look back and say, okay, when all these guys got together, because they do command it. I mean, between the Pope and, I mean, the Islam is a much more diffuse kind of hierarchy, right? But when these teachings start to come, it's an interesting thing.
And the language is quite stark. The statement reads, quote, "We are in danger of ending life as we know it on our planet. The current rate of climate change cannot be sustained. The Earth's fine equilibrium may soon be lost. And what will future generations say of us when we leave them a degraded planet as our legacy? How will we face our Lord and Creator?" Unquote. I mean, it's almost like a Laudato sequel, if you will. It's very, very strong and bold language.
You did it again, DR. A Laudato sequel. All right. Okay. Well, look, I guess we have to congratulate, you know, the leaders in the Islamic world that made that statement. I mean, there's a lot going on there, and for them to turn their attention to the question of climate must mean they take it very seriously. And I think it's a topic that ought to be taken seriously. So
definitely.
We'll have to leave it there. Let me remind our listeners that they can listen to the podcast on the blog, the MCAM blog. It's a new blog. It's massclimateaction.net/blog. And when you go there, you can find a SoundCloud link in order to get to SoundCloud to listen to us. Of course, you can find us on Facebook, which will bring you to the blog, which will then bring you to SoundCloud. But it's Facebook/massclimateaction. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher, but I'm a little upset with Stitcher because they failed to pick up our podcast for the last week. So people might think that it's missing. If we're not on Stitcher, you can go direct to Podbean, podbean.com, Podbean. And they have their own application that you can, listen to us on. So there's lots of ways. Of course, we're on iTunes. You can go there anytime you want. We get there pretty regularly. I guess Apple's more reliable than other services. And so there's lots of ways you can get in touch with us. We'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thanks, DR, for being here.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. goodbye, and we'll have a great week. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.